Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, alongside my co-host, Mr. Chad Riley.
Hi, I brought my shovel.
You brought your shovel?
Yeah, dig a little deeper.
Oh, that's true. We are going to dig a little deep because we are going to be talking about a movie that is fresh off the press. And you know what? It actually hasn't even hit the theaters
quite yet. It's so fresh, you probably haven't seen it yet.
Exactly. You know, that's how fresh it is that it's still on the ground. So, you know, we got an exciting show for you, and you know what? We're going to have a good time. Alongside us, as your usual host, we actually have two new friends.
We love having guests.
We do. We actually love bringing people to the studio.
We really have an open door policy, so if you want to come on the podcast, just let us know.
Oh, yeah. Just go ahead and knock.
I mean, we'll vet you and see if it's worth it, but...
Probably not. But, of course, you know him as the host of Video Game Bang. He is our fly on the wall, Mr. Corey Vincent.
Hey, Filmlosophers. How you guys doing?
We're good.
So good.
Well, I heard that you guys had Aaron on the show, and I cannot be outdone. Therefore, I have decided to come here, and I will fight Chad this week.
All you know right. What? You got some big shoes to fill if you're going to come in and outdo what Aaron did.
Aaron didn't do nothing. I listened to the episode, and Aaron, if you're listening to this, which I know you are, step up your game. Step up your game, son.
That is a calling out of Mr. Carter. But
and Aaron will be back next week.
I got to deal with the guy tomorrow night, actually. So
we're like, weren't on the docket. Who are you? And of course, we have a brand new friend. We have a great second host on the lineup here. She is the former host of YouTube's Indie Credible Reviews and now the current host of Kayvon War's Review, Miss Carla Von Guetta.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Welcome.
Good. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you. And of course, Carla's bringing that unique knowledge that, you know what, we just don't possess here on the Filmlosophers. I was going to say the Video Game Bank. On the Filmlosophers, and that is just solid video game knowledge.
I try.
Unfortunately, we do not possess that particular.
I have zero. And I'm not a gamer at all.
And so that may give you a little bit of a clue as to what we're going to be talking about today. But of course, The Filmlosophers is presented by who else? Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios, even late at night. If you just can't get enough of The Filmlosophers, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform and download previous episodes from Google Play, iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Stitcher, or Audioboom. You should know we're also on social media. You can like and follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at facebook.com/filmlosophers and twitter.com/filmosophy101 and share your thoughts about recent movie news on our latest review episode. Also, we are now live on vgbstudios.com, so woo-hoo! You can actually check out all our past episodes there, along with some information about us. So,
you, me, that guy over there,
the fly on the wall, Carla.
You guys have some synergy going on there.
Yeah, we try, but you know, it's not always... So today, at the very top, we're going to be going about some movie news. At the very top of our list, we got Blade Runner. The Blade Runner sequel adds Halt and Catch Fire star Mackenzie Davis. The Blade Runner 2 cast continues to grow as the film's July production start date approaches. It was announced today that actress Mackenzie Davis has joined the ensemble, which now includes Ryan Gosling, Harrison Ford, Robin Wright, Dave Bautista, Ana de Armas, Sylvia Hoeix, and Carla Jury. Davis is probably best known for her role on the AMC drama series Halt and Catch Fire, but first broke out in Drake Doremus's underseen 2013 feature Breathe In, and had subsequent roles in the romantic comedy That Awkward Moment and Best Picture nominee in The Martian. So, I'm a huge fan of Blade Runner.
I love this film,
and...
You could recite it backwards.
I probably could.
With your eyes closed.
Okay, this is kind of going to go into a little bit deeper than you guys probably want to know, but I have actually read college papers that were done on Blade Runner.
Just for fun.
Just for funsies.
Just read college papers.
There's a whole college essay that was done on the last 15 minutes of the film just based on Harrison Ford's interaction with the character at the end of that film, and I was mesmerized. So to see that it's getting a sequel, and to see that the casting list is getting bigger and more well-known actors, I'd say that's pretty cool. And I'm actually looking forward to it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
You might want to kill me, but I've never seen Blade Runner ever.
Oh, my gosh.
I have never seen it. I'm sorry.
Stop the podcast. No, we're going to go see the film.
It's all right. I've only seen it once. You've seen it like a million times.
At least.
Because you love it. I got freaked out by the crazy robot lady and didn't want to see it again.
Oh, yeah. I forget her name.
I know they have a name. Well, even the type of android that she is, there's a term.
There are replicants.
For it.
Replicants in the film. So to see how well this film is actually gaining some notoriety with all these big names, I mean, Ryan Gosling is a part of it. Robin Wright, the woman from House of Cards.
Right. Well, and many other things.
And many, but the most recent thing.
The woman who negotiated equal pay for House of Cards. Right.
Oh, really?
Oh, that was a huge story about a week and a half ago. Yeah.
Oh, I missed out on that.
It was a big deal.
Corey, what do you think about this?
I don't care. This is like before my time stuff.
It doesn't matter if it's before your time.
This Blade Runner came out like 5 years before I was born. And it just fits the ever-growing trend of these 80s movies that just keep getting remade or redone or remastered or updated. Mad Max, didn't care. They redid Dread, didn't care. RoboCop, didn't care. Did they redo RoboCop?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, okay. See, didn't care. They're just going to keep making these sci-fi films over and over and over again. And I'm over it.
You know, I think they do that for a reason, and well, they do it for a reason. The reason is money. They assume it's going to make money. But also, when you have something that worked because it was distinctive, because I think Blade Runner, because of its source material, Philip K. Dick, very prolific fiction novelist, gave us a lot of stories that have been transitioned into movies and or television show properties. But I think there was something so distinctive about it that they kind of want to bottle that lightning again and see if they can, because movies nowadays, even the amazing wow factor is somewhat homogenized. Like, it's the same kind of wow feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have something like Mad Max, Fury Road, which they wanted to capture that visceral, like, these are real vehicles, real people, real dude playing a fire guitar, and, you know, whatever. Like, they wanted you to have that kind of in-your-face, physical stunt work feel on that big grand scale, and they were successful.
I think they're just people cashing in on nostalgia. We've kind of hit the era of nostalgia. Go on Facebook at any given time and you can find 7 memes about how the 90s are better than now. And they're doing the same thing.
They're right.
See, you're feeding the fire, Chad.
Well, either way, though, despite all that, like Chad said, it was a great film, and who knows how this follow-up film will do. And you know what, as the production begins in July, we'll unveil more and more information about it.
You want to get me excited? Give me a new Bloodsport there.
I don't know if Van Damme
can
still do the splits like that.
Hollywood will not let you down.
I bet
eventually,
you it's in development right now.
They will not let you down.
I can't give you Bloodsport, but I can give you a new trailer for the new Ghostbusters film, as Sony has just released the official Ghostbusters International trailer, showcasing a bit more dialogue than the previous trailers. Facing some scrutiny, Ghostbusters follows a new group of paranormal experts 30 years after the original team made its debut. The film stars Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Chris Hemsworth, Bill Murray, Sigourney Weaver, and Leslie Jones. Whew. With a few cameos by the original team as well. Although the film is receiving early criticism by fans of the original duology, having such a unique cast and with writer-director Paul Feig on its side, this film might very well be the surprise of the summer.
And it might very well be. I have to say, one of the things that I have an issue with, and this is the article that you were referencing for this piece, is that they list 3 out of 4 Lady Ghostbusters, and then they like just tack Leslie Jones onto the end of it.
I just, you know what, I reported
like,
as I said.
She's the least famous of all these people, so we'll just like put all the famous names in. I don't know. I'm like, it's a quartet. It's always a quartet. The originals, quartet.
It's true.
The lady version, quartet.
It's true that it has reached
them together.
It has received a lot of criticism, and it has received a lot of scrutiny from a lot of people as a female of the group, because we rarely do have a woman's aspect in the podcast, as the last time we did was when Hannah was here.
Mm-hmm.
So by all means, what do you think as far as with everything that you've seen so far of the new Ghostbusters films, how do you think it'll rate as far as its success or failure?
You know, I am optimistic about it, to be honest. I know that it's received like a pretty, you know, bad rap. And I think a lot of that comes from, I believe it or not, I hear a lot of people complaining about the name, that they feel that the name should have. Yeah. Yeah.
The Ghostbusters name.
Yeah, the Ghostbusters name, that it should have been rebranded to something else. But I mean, I am going into it cautiously optimistic, but everything I've seen from the trailers, and I know people hated the trailers. I don't really understand the hate, though. I mean, and I was a really big Ghostbusters fan of the original film. I just think it's, I'm going into it optimistic. I'm just going to say that much.
Corey?
I kind of have an unfair advantage here, because how I so? Do have an insider who's already seen the movie.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. They've seen it in like pre-alpha.
Since
this is a gamer themed thing.
You have an insider.
I have an insider.
This person locked in a room.
We've talked. Oh yeah, we've talked about this. I remember we actually.
I don't remember disclosing any information to you.
I mean, this is brand new to my ears.
Allegedly,
but what can you gather?
I have a feeling that the movie's gonna be better than everyone thinks it's gonna be.
Really?
And that Leslie Jones is gonna be the funniest part of the movie.
Thank you.
I'm just saying.
Thank you.
That's just my thoughts. Based on no factual knowledge or anybody who's seen the film, it's going to be better than you think, and Leslie Jones is the funniest.
So please, ladies and gentlemen, do not quote us on that, because it is not factual. It is circumstantial.
Purely speculation. It's
pure speculation. The biggest thing for me is I'm not all too familiar with a lot of these women other than the two that have done movies, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy. And I've seen them in Bridesmaids, and I've seen them in the different iterations that they've been on in the films. And I'm optimistic, because I'd like to see a new iteration of, kind of like Carla said, of the Ghostbusters. It's not a sexist thing. It's not a discrimination thing or whatever. I'm just uncertain if these people can carry that mantle.
It goes to the thing I think you guys talked about with Aaron on X-Men. It's, if you're a fan of a series and you love it, and you're the true source material is what you hold dear, and then when you see them take such drastic missteps with the characters, it's off-putting.
Yeah.
You have to go in there and not expect it to be the old Ghostbusters. You have to go in there with a complete clean slate and enjoy it for what it is. If you don't like
the challenge with any of these reboots, remakes, adaptations, I mean, the movie makers have to make choices based on what they think will sell tickets, get butts in the seats, and get buzz generated.
Which is good for them. That's where we lose. Because with X-Men, sorry to dig up some old bones, but to make Jennifer Lawrence the centerpiece of that movie was a complete just Hollywood thing to do. It didn't serve the story.
Well, and I mean, she was part of the triumvirate. I would say there are three centerpieces in that. Aaron and I talked about it at length on the previous episode. Go listen to it.
Yeah, check it out. It was a good episode.
You know, but I mean, you can be reductionist and narrow down something that you really didn't like and even here, people are reducing. They see maybe one component or a couple components that they don't like in the teaser trailer months ago. And then now that is their definition for the entire movie, which Sony has an interesting challenge now to try to overcome the early interpretation of what is truly just sneak footage with, okay, now we got to try to overcome the things that people are saying against the film, but also stay true to, like, teasing the film.
This one, I would feel...
Don't promise something you didn't make.
I would feel even worse if... I'm not a huge Ghostbuster fan. That's why this doesn't really light my fire to get all bent out of shape. But take a series that I really like, and I can't even think of one off the top of my head right now, but, you know, a series that I'm obsessed with, and then you put Seth Rogen and... what's the other guy's name? Franco.
James Franco.
You put James Franco in it. That's kind of what they did here. They took a property, Ghostbusters, and then they're throwing in people who very much have a niche comedy sense. This is going to be Bridesmaids Ghostbusters. It's just what it's going to be. You got the same type of jokes. Melissa McCarthy's going to be the funny fat girl who trips over things. You know, they all play to their strengths.
Sure.
And so it's like taking a property that you love and then throwing in, I don't know. If I was a Ghostbusters fan, I'd be pretty pissed.
Well, see, here's the thing. I want to keep that mindset because that's how I started out. But in the end, after seeing a lot of these trailers and a lot of what they're really pushing is the mindset of this is not the original team. This is not the four that we were used to in Ghostbusters, the first one. And we're trying something to do something different. And I'm trying to cling to that hope that there may be a possibility that this comes out on top as a continuation of that franchise. But all in all, we'll see how it continues to progress.
I do have to say that theme song really stands up in the test of time. I haven't seen this international trailer that's mentioned in the news bit that we're talking about, but the full-length trailer they released a few weeks ago, I mean, they've modernized it and, you know, whatever, but still, I mean, it's just like, oh, I like that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talking about changing things, we got a new addition to the cast of Pacific Rim 2. John Boyega joins the cast. He fought aliens in the First Order for J.J. Abrams last Christmas, and John Boyega will now battle giant monsters. Deadline is reporting that Boyega has been cast as the lead in Stephen S. DeKnight's Pacific Rim 2. Boyega will be playing the son of Idris Elba's character from Pacific Rim, Stacker Pentecost. In addition, Boyega will be co-producing the film alongside Guillermo del Toro, Thomas Tull, Mary Parent, John Jashny, and Femi Ogans. Now, we talked about this a bit ago, and I did make the assumption that, you know, people were asking who was he going to play, what this and that, and I did make the assumption that, oh, well, there's a possibility he could be Stacker Pentecost's son. But you pointed something out to me that kind
of... You actually said, I thought he would be playing a younger Pentecost as a flashback.
But yeah.
Yes. My point of view was, number one, I hope that they're not transferring the property straight onto his shoulders, because while Star Wars is a phenomenal franchise, lots of backing, I don't know that he's shown us yet that he's leading man material,
mm-hmm.
number one. Number two, they have several characters from the first movie that should carry over unless there's a huge time jump,
mm-hmm.
Which there shouldn't be if he's playing Idris Elba's character's son.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was mentioning to you, I just thought he'd be a brand new character. Kind of, I don't know, I think in Hollywood a lot of times nowadays you see like the surprise family relations and the children and what, like everybody's hyper connected, and that kind mm-hmm. of annoys me to a little bit.
Except it's not really like a surprise. I mean, usually if there's two right. black characters, they're related.
Right. And but they do it all the time. I mean, where yeah. it's just like, oh, and it turns out that we're secretly siblings or what, you know what, and it makes the world feel smaller instead of bigger mm-hmm. in any given movie. And so it's interesting that they would choose. I'm assuming they think that they've got a good storyline with Pentecost having a son and that son taking up his father's mantle or whatever he's going to do. But I don't know. I wouldn't have jumped to the conclusion that, oh, they mm-hmm. must be related or he's an earlier version of that character, because why not just introduce somebody new?
Look, they already did this to him in Star Wars. Everyone's speculating that he's related to Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
Right.
And in all likelihood, it's probably going to happen. Like, in the next one, Lando is rumored to be back.
Yeah.
And so it's going to happen. I'm more excited to see if Charlie Hunnam comes back. And then there's also rumors that Ron Perlman's supposed to be in it. And that's like a Sons of Anarchy reunion
yeah.
that I want to see.
Carla, what is your opinion on the series? Have you seen the first one?
The Pacific Rim?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
You haven't?
No, I feel horrible, but if it's not about video games,
uh-huh.
my knowledge is like...
You played Titanfall, like, right?
Not there. Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of figured it was along the same... Like, I know what Pacific Rim is, and actually I've seen half of it. I just never finished the other half. So, yeah.
So you're partially familiar.
Yeah, there you go. You're partially familiar.
Just a bit.
I fell asleep during most of it, so we are like on the same level.
But you know what? I'm interested to see how the film goes in this sequel, because after the first film, it didn't seem like there was much else to go on from. It seemed like the ending was done.
If it had to be a standalone movie, it would have ended just fine.
Yeah.
As a standalone movie. Wouldn't have to continue.
So it's interesting to see where this film is going to take off. But that does bring us to our class discussion as we review the film that we just actually came back from. We are fresh from the theaters, and we are going to be talking about Warcraft. Ladies and gentlemen, we had a pre-screen of the film. I know it does come out this Friday. But we had ourselves a sneak preview, and to tell you the least, we are mixed reviews, and we actually all have mixed reviews.
To tell you the least?
To tell you the least.
Somewhere in the middle.
That's about true.
Isn't he the most, to say the least?
It is the most, to say the least. You know what? Warcraft is directed by Duncan Jones and stars Travis Fimmel, Paula Patton, Ben Foster, Dominic Cooper, Toby Kebbell, Robert Kaczynski, and many more. You know, the film, as a video game film, it does give me hope. But overall, as we're going to talk about, there's a lot of questions that I have. I left the theater probably with more questions than I did answers. And that is why we have Miss Carla here to explain to us. Now, Carla, you were telling me that...
Yeah, we should maybe preface this whole conversation with the fact that you and I specifically, as hosts of this show, we know movies.
Yes, we do.
We like movies.
That we do.
Not as strong on the gaming front.
None whatsoever.
I've never, ever played this game. Have you ever played this game, Eddie?
When I was younger.
So you have a minor familiarity. I have a very minimal, yeah. I have zero familiarity. So that's why we've called Carla and Corey in, because they bring the game knowledge.
We bring our video game experts in to tell us and to show us what it is that we're looking at here, and if it, you know, lives up to the hype of a lot of people have been, what a lot of people have been expecting from this film. Now, Carla, you've been playing for some time now.
Yes.
Warcraft.
Yes, I
have. What is your experience with the game? What exactly is, if you were to explain in a quick nutshell, what exactly is World of Warcraft?
Okay, so World of Warcraft in a very basic nutshell is MMORPG.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm sorry. I'm obsessed. I've been playing since 2010, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't been playing since Vanilla WoW, which is the first iteration of a World of Warcraft or anything.
She's
like
dropping
that.
Video gamer terms on you. Vanilla is like before all the patches.
Trust me, I'm
taking
notes.
No, it's okay. No, that's why I'm here.
That. I am taking notes
hardcore.
Furiously.
I was thinking about ice cream.
See?
I mean,
not afraid to show my ignorance.
So the game goes back as far as the mid-90s, I would assume.
It's been around forever. It's a paid subscription game. The people who are into this game are into this game.
They're very much tied to it.
Yes, because they're financially invested. It's what,
$15
a month?
$15 a month.
I remember selling. I used to work at a GameStop and sell the cards, and it was like crack cocaine.
Yeah.
People would walk in, and then they'd scratch in their arm, like, y'all got any more of them time cards? Like, yes, I do, sir.
Yep.
I'll divulge a little bit. I've only played through the free beta thing. So they let they let you play up to level 20 for
like
free.
A trial version or something?
Yeah, it's a trial version. I didn't get bit. I didn't get the bug.
You didn't get the bug?
So I passed. But I'm interested, Carla, how many level... what's the max level these days?
Let me see. I know that with the last expansion, you get the free boost to level 90.
Okay.
So, I think with Legion, that should be coming out at the tail end of August, they're going to bump the level up. But to be honest, I do not know what level they're going to bump that up to.
And all this means did lead to my mindset. But we're talking about the film that is actually based on this game that has taken the world by a storm. And has pretty much, like you said, encapsulated a lot of people to their computers. A lot of money is tied to this. A lot of
South Park episodes dedicated to it. I mean, it's a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
So the film that we saw, it's based off of that. And just a quick synopsis of the film, the peaceful realm of Azeroth stands on the brink of war as its civilization faces a fearsome race of invaders, orc warriors fleeing from their dying home to colonize another. As a portal opens to connect the two worlds, one army faces destruction and the other faces extinction. From opposing sides, two heroes are set on a collision course that will decide the fate of their family, their people, and their home. I know I said fast, but that was kind of in-depth. So, you know what? We're going to go ahead and go over this film a little bit, and I really want to get... First and foremost, I want to learn what you guys know about this film so that it can make what I saw a little bit more sense.
Yeah, this movie, by the way, is pretty dense.
It is.
I mean, if you've seen Lord of the Rings... the original trilogy, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of visual cues and a lot of story elements that there are some similarities, but it's sort of like putting key parts of two of those three films mm-hmm. together into the same movie. And so for the uninitiated, like myself,
and
like
myself.
Eddie, it's a lot to take in a 2 hour block of time.
So before like true video game nerds start flipping out on us, like, oh, the story's not based off of World of Warcraft. We do know that it was based off of the Warcraft series that came before the MMO. Mm-hmm. So before it was this MMO, like giant RPG world, it was like a top down RTS game,
yeah.
Which stands for real time strategy.
Can you guys hear that?
Thank you so much. I'm like RTS.
Can you guys hear that? I'm writing furiously.
And what I will say about the movie, one of my biggest criticisms and one of the biggest things that I walked out of there, you know, kind of semi disappointed with, is the fact that it was so dense. And for somebody that it doesn't come from a history of knowing the lore of World of Warcraft mm-hmm. or having ever played the games, it definitely can go over people's heads,
yeah.
for sure. And I think video game adaptations, you know, into movies, they get such a bad rap. And I think a lot of it is studios pandering a little too much to fan service.
Yeah.
I think for a video game movie to be successful, you kind of have to do a little bit of both. You kind of have to maybe do a little bit of pandering and a little bit of fan service, but also welcome new people into the fandom mm-hmm. as well. So when something is just so dense, I feel like it goes over people's heads and they're not as engaged as they would be.
Yeah.
They wouldn't walk out of the film thinking, oh, I want to know more. They kind of are like, okay, that was a cool experience, I guess. Well,
So let's go ahead and talk about this. As the film opens...
Spoiler alert. Just...
Okay.
Full spoilers. Right?
Full spoilers.
Full spoilers ahead.
As the film opens, we come to a planet of sorts. We come to a different world.
In video games, we call them realms. They're realms.
So we're in a different realm. Apparently, the orcs... were living for some time because it took some time planet.
In the very beginning, because this is something that confused
yeah.
me because
oh, yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
know what was happening. In the very, very beginning, there's like a prologue mm-hmm. where you have a human man pick up a shield and a sword and face an orc, and it's point of view almost from the orc.
Right, that's right.
And they charge together and they fight, and then it goes dark. And then you go, what turns out to be, I believe, you go into the past. Of
yeah.
Correct.
The conflict. There's a voiceover that says, you know, humans and orcs have been fighting for as long as anybody can remember, and there are reasons why and whatever. But it doesn't tell you that you're going into the past.
Yeah.
So I sat there for about 20 minutes waiting to see if we were going to go back to that fight. And at the end of the movie, I was waiting to see if they were going to go back to that fight and tell me, okay, so that fight occurred in the now or in the later or in the previous.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And
complete
they never explained
throwaway
it.
Scene, in
yeah.
my opinion.
I mean, I believe it was trying to give precedence for the idea of, you know, what this never ending battle between mm-hmm. the two, but it does. It does get, you know, washed over as far as it holds no, you know, credence to the whole movie. It adds nothing to it. So probably why I forgot all about it. But ultimately, after that, after we get the title sequence, we do come to the other realm.
Thank you.
Where the orcs are residing, and it happens to be a dying planet. You were telling me while we were waiting in line that there's an actual name for this realm?
Draenor.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe it was stated in the film, but the yep. good thing is that we were talking before the film, and I do remember that. So Draenor. So the film is, the planet is dying, not the film. The planet
is
dying.
It's a very apropos name.
Yeah,
considering what's been happening to it.
Yep.
Draenor.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The life has been literally being sucked
Draenor
out of it.
Is being yeah. drained.
Drained. Mm-hmm.
And so we have this orc civilization from all different points. They're all different tribes and whatnot that are heading to a particular point. Now, what they're heading to is a portal that's being built to travel to another realm.
Mm-hmm.
Corey.
Thank you.
So... first off, my question is this portal part of the lore of the game? I was wondering, I was like, this seems to be a pretty big piece of this film. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, does that connect to people who have played the game and they're going to be like, oh, that's from the first game kind
yes.
of deal?
Yes, actually. Funny enough, when you log in to play World of Warcraft, big portal.
Right up in the front?
Yep, that's right up in the front. So yeah, it definitely ties in together for sure. Something that you guys may not have caught, because it was very brief, was in the beginning when they're at Draenor and they're trying to get to Azeroth. They have a race called the Draenei. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with it at all.
Were those the pale blue people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the pale blue people.
The ones who were imprisoned.
Yes, they actually inhabit Draenor alongside the orcs.
Okay, so then that pretty much gives a little bit, if you understand the game, then you know, kind of have an understanding of how they travel through these portals by utilizing the civilization that is currently inhabiting the planet. Oh, okay, so that...
Exactly.
That would have made sense. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep, now we're...
So we go from that point, and they've collected these...
Draenei,
mm-hmm. and they've used them, their life force, as a power to pretty much power up this portal so they can go through and find a new realm. That's when we are introduced to our main orc that we mostly see, Durotan, and who is played by Toby Kebbell. And we notice that his wife is pregnant and whatnot. So I don't know if that's also a part of the lore, because there was a really heavy reference on her being pregnant and the child making it in the end.
They concealed the pregnancy so that she could go through the portal with the rest of the warriors. Mm-hmm. And then immediately upon going through the portal and getting to the other side, then she starts to go into labor. And the child is essentially stillborn. And the orc Golden. Mage, sorcerer, what's the proper term?
He used to be a shaman.
He used to be a shaman, so he's the magic user that created the portal by sucking life out of the Draenei to make the portal, right? He actually essentially drains life out of a deer and
it was Bambi.
Infuses it into the baby, and the baby comes back to life.
Just like that.
Yeah.
And the baby's adorable, by the way. I didn't expect the orc baby to be so cute.
They've really put a lot of work into that CGI. I'm just real quick, right off the top, the CGI work in this film, the way they worked on these, I guess they used mocap for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. It is off the charts. It is great. Because like you said, with that baby scene, it looks like a real baby. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they were just holding like a really large green tube or something.
But they made it look adorable. I would say, actually, from your list, you always start this out with like who's in the film. And and while there are some standouts in the cast, I would say the most impressive cast member in this movie is ILM, that did the primary work on the orcs and, you know, all the CGI characters.
I mean,
it's
agree with that.
Very realistic feeling.
Yeah, the orcs are very believable. I will say, Goldon, there was never a moment that I looked at him and thought, oh, he might be real. But when I was looking at the orcs, I'm like, yeah, I would believe that that's actually real. So yeah, I definitely agree with
their
that
anatomy
statement.
Fits that world so good. Oh, like they did really a great job of like you know how, like, the new Ninja Turtles caused an upgrade, or the new, what's that? That stupid Superman versus Batman movie, Doomsday.
Doomsday.
Like, how bad Doomsday looked. Like, they made so many sacrifices for whatever reasons, but because Blizzard had their hands in this so much, they made sure that those characters popped out of the video game.
Oh, yeah.
From not only the way they looked, but even the way they talked. I mean, it seemed like a natural thing to talk with those tusks in their mouth. I don't know if, like, while they were doing the voice acting work, that they actually had, like,
did
stuff.
Something. They had to have.
Because it sounded great. So that's our introduction to the orcs. We then transfer over to the realm, which is called...
Azeroth.
Mm-hmm. And we meet King...
Lane.
Who?
Lane.
Mm-hmm. King Lane, which is played by Dominic Cooper. And we are introduced to him, and we are introduced to his captain... or his general, whomever it may be, which is named Lothar, which is played by Travis Fimmel.
A.K.A. Ragnar Lothbrok
from Vikings.
History Channel's like Vikings.
Now,
one trick pony.
You know what? I was going to say, one thing that you recognize right away with this particular individual is he does play the same individual no matter what he's doing, but I still like seeing him do it, whether if it's Ragnar in Vikings or it's Lothar in Azeroth. I enjoy seeing the way this man squirms in certain situations and just looks awkward at times and delivers just the right quip. You know,
they had an interesting way of using, again, I don't know the lore. I don't know if these are named characters from the game that have more history than what I know about them from the screen. I was very surprised because he's kind of been pitched in promotional materials as the main representative of the humans. And Lothar. Then Lothar, yeah, Travis Fimmel's character. And then Durotan is the main representative of the orcs. Mm-hmm. And I totally get Durotan. And I was just really confused about, okay, which human are we supposed to be paying the most attention to?
Yeah.
Because he kind of is, he's the military leader, but it's also easy in several sequences for him to take a back seat because there are magic users. And it kind of is, in a way, it's a story about magic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's good magic and bad magic. And some of that may have crossed over into one another unintentionally or whatever. And so that's a big driving force behind the narrative, and so having him as a non-magic user, it was hard for me to buy him as the human representative.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got two magic users who are humans, and then you've got the king and his wife and a few others that are also in the story. Mm-hmm. I it was interesting. I don't know if I buy him as the co-lead,
yeah,
if you will.
Carla, as being our World of Warcraft expert, does Dominique Cooper play the king as you would imagine? I'm assuming that the king has his part in the lore of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that somebody like Dominique Cooper is playing it, did he play it to the strengths of what the character could be, or was there still room somewhere that, you know, could have been done better, or how was his performance at portraying Lane?
I didn't have an issue with his performance, to be honest. I didn't have an issue with any of the actors' performance as far as that goes. What I do think that the studio and, you know, Blizzard was trying to accomplish here is basically set forth the story so people have something to go off of, because obviously their intention is to go ahead and produce sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And to be completely honest, even though this is important, you know, and it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, definitely something you build on when you're wanting to get into WoW or understand any more of the lore, it's still not as important as what the MMORPG is based on, which is what I think that they're trying to get to. So I think what they did with this is they laid the groundwork, which is why it's so dense, and they didn't take enough time to really hold the audience's hand to explain certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as performances go, all across the board, I thought they were great, really. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any issues with anybody's performance. But yeah, it comes back to where it falls apart a little bit for me is just that. And that's because I go into movies not only thinking as a fan, I walked out very content, but also as just somebody that is wanting this to do well.
Yeah.
And knowing that it needs to do well with, you know, mainstream people who don't know about it either.
Yeah. And one of the other key things that we are actually introduced to after this particular, well, even before this particular scene, but another key character, you know, you can say, of the film was the cinematography of the film. Now, although it was all just about CGI, it was still pretty beautiful stuff. I mean, even from going from Draenor, I believe,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
Draenor. And seeing the desolate wasteland that it was to, you know, the lush and floridable kind of Azeroth, and you see the kingdoms and whatnot, and you're seeing, you know, the who is the guardian?
Oh,
Medivh?
Yeah.
Medivh?
Ben Foster?
Medivh.
Even where you see where he resides, it's beautiful for me, and I would have loved to see more and more as to how much...
It actually is the closest thing to me, and I know that we've had other, you know, like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm. or Rise of the Planet of the Apes, whatever, and you've got very highly CGI'd environments, mm-hmm. in other movies, or even something recent like The Jungle Book. yes, it's the jungle, but it's all CGI. Pretty much every bit of it, aside from Mowgli the boy. But here, you've got humans and orcs and Draenei and all kinds of other little... It's the closest thing to me as the original experience visually of seeing James Cameron's Avatar, just in the sense of it is a fully CGI world that also has human characters interacting with the world and, you know, alien creatures of some sort in that environment. It has that same immersive experience, although it looks very different. It still has the same immersive quality for me.
One of the things that we also continue to see after we get introduced to the king and his group of people and his leadership and whatnot, we find that they are alerted that there is some type of group of warriors who are terrorizing the countryside. They're going around and they're destroying stuff and whatnot. And so they decide to, as I mentioned, the Guardian, they decide to enlist the help of the Guardian. Corey, are you familiar with who the Guardian is in the game?
Not at all.
You're not?
Nope.
Does the Guardian, Carla, play a key role in the actual game itself?
Not so much, to be completely honest. I mean, most of this is going to be lore. So it doesn't really have too much of a place in an actual World of Warcraft as we know it today. These are all people that you would recognize, storylines that you would at least be vaguely familiar with if you actually played the game. And having said that, it's very easy actually to play World of Warcraft and not even know any of the lore whatsoever.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, it is very easy because it's not like there's no crazy voice acting involved or anything.
Yeah,
you're basically just taking quests, so it's up to you whether you actually want to take the time to read what the quest is about and actually really immerse yourself in the experience.
I'm very guilty of that when I did play. I would just go up and talk to someone, mash, and then the quest comes up, kill 5 cows and then come back with their hides.
Yeah, all exactly. Right.
So here's a question then: does the game incorporate the actual storyline, you know, expertly interwoven through the game? Like, are you playing and then is there like a cutscene with some information that's vital to knowing your character and so forth? Or does it just, I mean, how does the storyline incorporate into the game?
It happens sometimes, and it happens mainly when there's an expansion. So if you're like for example, and you know, this isn't like spoilery or anything like that, but with the latest expansion, when you have the option to boost one of your characters to level 90. When you actually make that boost, it gives you like a whole cinematic, and I mean it's epic.
Blizzard is phenomenal at their storytelling in their video games and the quality that they put into their cutscenes. So cutscenes are basically little movies in the video game, and Blizzard, even with this game that they've just completely dominated the world with, Overwatch right now, they went into a full campaign of these short films, essentially, for most of the main characters that were challenges Pixar.
Really?
Like, it's that good. The quality of the CGI is on point. These battle scenes and action scenes and the cartooniness of the characters, that needs to be the next movie. Blizzard is, and even the last StarCraft expansion, it was a movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, these guys, Blizzard, when they put their name on something, they do it well.
And piggybacking on that, actually, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but there are a bunch of cinematics for World of Warcraft that are just gorgeous. I mean, they're basically on level with the Overwatch cinematics that have been, you know, coming out over the past couple of weeks, months.
Eddie, you spoke, didn't you interview a mocap?
I did. I got a chance to speak to Andre Tricoteau, who did the motion capture for one of the orc captains of the film. And he was stating, he had stated that when they would do motion capture, that Blizzard would have 2 rows of 8 different computers of people who are processing and rendering all the motion capture in real time so that they can get the best type of motion capture they could do. He was blown away. He said he had never been on a set like that ever in the history of doing motion capture, and he felt like, you know what, Blizzard really was investing not just money but time into making sure that this film was, in his words, the best CGI film that anybody could ever see.
I don't see very many pieces of evidence indicating that it is not one of the best examples of CGI used in a movie. Yeah. Like you mentioned Avatar. Avatar, the environments were beautiful, but those character models look like stick figure drawings compared to, I think, how good these orcs were and detailed. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, and I think you do get some of the carryover. Like, you can actually see some of the unique patterns on the skin if there's sweat forming. Like, they did that in Avatar, too. But obviously, technology has come a certain amount of distance.
Technology has changed.
8-7 years or however long it's been. So this is very reflective of how far the technology has advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you get, like you said, when you have a company like Blizzard who is willing to invest so much of their time, a video game company who does nothing but render, you know, different things for video games, different kinds of sprites and different kinds of things for the actual gameplay.
I don't know how many sprites they're using, but...
Well, you know what I mean, though. The
yeah,
different...
I got you. You're showing your age is what happened.
Yeah, you know what? You get a quality product that most people get every other, you know, 3 months when you buy a video game. You know, they're putting out stuff like that, and it's top-notch. Stuff like Overwatch, like you say, it's great quality stuff. Like you were saying, the games that you were talking about that are great quality. As the film continues, we obviously, so in a nutshell, the film moves on where the Guardian is made aware that there is an issue going on and that they need to fight it. They find out that it is the orcs. They capture Garona, mm-hmm. who's played by Paula Patton. They capture her and end up befriending her. They make her an ally who helps her find where
her
orcs
position
are.
With the humans advances rapidly.
It really does, because
I really enjoyed her, but it was really confusing.
It moved from we're capturing you so we can get information to, oh yeah, you can go ahead and sit in my
let's
throne.
Let's be best
and
friends. You can be my right hand person.
I'm not
we trust you.
I'm not too sure if she's that kind of a trusting. I'm knowing the way that she's been, because apparently she was a captive by. Gildan or
Gul'dan.
The orc.
I didn't see how that goes. How she could have made that switch so quickly.
Well, see, she was like a halfling, so she's not full blooded orc, and she was treated like crap. They did a good job. She was like chained up at the beginning. She showed compassion towards the little blue things. So they kind of, I agree. They could have done more or put her in a situation where it would be more clear, like have one of the orcs slap her around or something.
Yeah,
would have been more like of slap us around and be like, yeah, that she's not happy where she's at.
But I mean, with the way how intensely violent and crazy the film was, I probably wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, why they didn't do that.
Yeah, but well, for sure. Oh, go ahead.
From a story perspective, and again, this is, I'm totally ignorant of World of Warcraft and anything that may or may not happen in the lore. From a story perspective, Garona and Durotan are the two main characters of this film in terms of the sympathetic ones, the protagonist characters.
It does seem like a love story in a sense.
Well, and not between Durotan and Garona, but for Garona has a pivotal role in several scenes individually and then in the movie as a whole by the end of it. And so things like, you can tell visually that she doesn't look like the other orcs. She looks like an orc and a human, maybe, if that's a thing. I don't know. But they don't actually explain it.
No.
They sort of come close with what may or may not be a tease that could also be total red herring, and it's not anything worth following that rabbit trail.
Yeah.
You know, but for the prominence that she has in the story, and she was one of my favorite characters. I thought she was very fascinating.
Yeah.
To put in a story like this, a character like that, was very compelling to me. But I wanted to know more about, okay, but really, though, where did she come from?
Okay, so Garona is actually, she's very interesting, because the film basically puts her as though she's half human, half orc. That's what everybody believes.
That was the mindset I was getting.
She is actually half Draenei, half orc. Is what she is. That's why you see her being sympathetic to the Draenei.
Because she's part one of them.
Yeah, exactly. So she's actually half Draenei, half orc. What I realize is that they don't ever specify if she's half human or not. So, you know, I guess it's possible that, you know, they can get away with that being like, oh, we never said that.
Yeah. Does she play a large role in the overall lore of World of Warcraft? Or
In this particular part of the lore, she kind of does. And something you don't necessarily see that the movie doesn't really put out there is that actually she is supposed to be a spy slash assassin for Gul'dan.
Oh.
And you don't see that either. So, yeah, I mean, her alliances are, like, very mixed. She's a very interesting character. But, yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. You know, and I think it's funny you guys, you know, picked up on that. You're like, she's very interesting, but I don't know where she's coming from. You know,
it's like they give you a lot of emotion, but they don't give you a lot of backstory.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the red herring that Chad was talking about, it actually really did throw me. I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And that goes to, you know, just spoiler alert, like we said, that goes to where the Guardian, Medivh, is talking to Garona, and he's alluding to the fact that he had a relationship with somebody who was otherworldly, because he said he went to the ends of the world and whatnot to find love and whatnot. And he finds somebody, and they had something going on and whatnot and so forth. And it doesn't explain where that conversation goes, where that story leads, because he cuts it right before they actually, you know, he's about to explain.
Yeah, it cuts off, and then he, like, sends her away.
Yeah, he's like, oh, go whatever, or go do something.
Here's a pretty magic flower that teleports you.
Yeah, that's actually one of the criticisms I have of the film, too, is I noticed, and purely just from a moviegoer perspective, I kind of noticed that their scenes are... They kind of end them, like, prematurely, and they don't really... There's no resolution to the end of a scene.
Yeah.
Just...
Did you know the truth about Garona, what she is?
Well, Corey, they used the term halfling, and so just fantasy knowledge tells you that it's a half-breed of clearly orc because of the teeth.
Yeah.
I had assumed human because throughout the story she's having kind of a love thing with Ragnar Lothbrok. And then
kind of comes out of nowhere.
Is that what we're gonna just call
him?
He's
Ragnar. He's always Ragnar. Yeah, and then the other part,
definitely Ragnar.
That part you guys were referring to, where he gave her the flower, I thought that was like a way of saying that he might be her daddy.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. And then the flower like was kind of like the final nail in the coffin. Like, oh yeah, this is sealed. This is it. This is what's going on. He is her daddy. All Maury Povich and whatnot on her, and like you are the father kind of deal. So this isn't true then. This is not according to
the lore. No.
No.
she's half Draenei, half orc.
That
but
is
again,
a strike for you.
But again, I don't know if, you know, they intended to completely just switch the storyline to have her be maybe more relatable in that sense, especially since you don't really see the Draenei at all in this movie. So you don't really
other than the first like 5 minutes of the film.
Exactly. And it's very
well,
very
and it's only
quick.
To establish her character.
Exactly.
She tries to advocate for one of them for about 15 seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's almost all you see until they get drained of their life force.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was wondering was this particular character who happens to be a runaway mage in training, I guess. He was at a certain school or whatnot, or like
the
Hogwarts.
City in the clouds.
He was like at Hogwarts, and he was trying to learn how to be a magician or a sorcerer or whatnot. And so we're talking about...
Silly man.
Abracadabra.
Hocus pocus. You know, we're talking about Kalen or Callan?
Cagdar.
Cagdar. Mm-hmm. I was close. One of those guys. Mm-hmm. He is a runaway from that school. He's a runaway from wherever they were training him. And he ends up becoming one of the more prominent characters in the film because, as you see, he learns more and more and more about what's going on. It almost becomes like a conspiracy movie because the Guardian is like, no, stop looking into this. I'll take care of it. Burns everything up. But I didn't really get enough of his information, his character development, to really want to invest more in him. I mean, he did come out in the end as being one of the guys who helped, you know, save everybody, but it didn't do it for me.
I happen to really like his relationship with Ragnar. I thought that the way that those two worked...
Ragnar.
I think the way that those two worked together was like a nice duo. There was comedy thrown in there.
Like a buddy cop.
Exactly, like a buddy cop movie.
Yeah, and you know what? Like you said, the relationship between those two, it was hilarious. Because there were even times where he was, in times of peril, he was making fun of him, and he would come back with something. It was just, he made the situations really light and comedic for me.
Yeah, they had an interesting interplay that was different than the way the other characters were relating to each other. There were some scenes I would say it felt a bit forced in some of the more dramatic battle sequences or whatever. And I mean, essentially by the climactic scene of the movie, those two characters are actually in the place and position of most importance, and they're still telling jokes to one another. And I felt like, on the one hand, it was kind of a nice nod to some of the camaraderie that I appreciate from the original Star Wars trilogy, mm-hmm. right? Where you've got dramatic situation, somebody shooting at you or whatever, but you can still throw a little joke or a quip in there here and yeah. there. But then the rest of this film is so serious that it felt tonally very different. And part of the storyline for Ragnar's character, Lothar, is he has a strained relationship with his son,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lack of fatherly support, pride, love, whatever you want to call it, in some of their history, and yet he has it effortlessly with this other character. This Khadgar.
Khadgar.
The mage or
the runaway mage.
He was a mage, right?
He's a runaway mage, basically.
See, ha, I'm learning the terminology.
Wait, are you talking about Athelstan?
Yeah.
Who the heck is that?
Athelstan from Vikings.
Oh my god.
The actor's not the same, but the relationship is very similar.
It's like for no reason all of a sudden Ragnar's like obsessed with this guy.
Really tight.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I agree fully with what Chad's saying, because I thought some of those comedic times, although maybe one or two were forced, but it did give a break to the overall seriousness of the film, because if it was overall serious without any of those breaks, I think I would have just gotten bored over time, just because it was so serious and so needing of my emotional attention kind of deal. I think those moments actually allowed for a sense of relaxation before the film continued on in the next scene. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I felt like they're so far and few between that I kind of agree with Chad. Like, when it happens in a Marvel movie, it seems like it's Marvel takes the truth in comedy type of way. Like, this, they're not making jokes,
mm-hmm.
but what they're saying in the given situation just happens to be really funny. In this one,
and
I felt
the characters are consistent.
Yeah, the characters are consistent.
Doing that.
In this one, I feel like it was a very serious movie. Like, you just see a dude's head get snapped off, or, you know, like, it was violent.
Yeah.
And then instead of just being naturally funny, I feel like it was a joke. Like, here we go. Here's going to come a joke. Punchline. And then
yeah, they
move
seem
on.
To give Travis Fimmel some really weird punchline lines of dialogue that don't really befit the main general of the human army.
What do you think, Carla?
I mean, I could definitely see the perspective of, like, you know, the forced jokiness. And I mean, I think a lot of that is, it's very difficult to bring comedy into that because, I mean, as cartoony still as World of Warcraft looks, it's actually a pretty, it's a pretty epic kind of grim, really heavy
mm-hmm.
lore and content material. So bringing humor into that, I can totally see how they would have a little bit of difficulty doing that.
Mm. So. Well, you know, as the film continues, we do get to, and like we said, spoiler alert, we do find that the Guardian, Medivh, is actually the one who brought the orcs over. He is responsible for...
Oops.
That was a terrible... Like, how long did it take you to figure that out, Chad?
It was decided way early.
It's...
There's so many that they, in a well put together story, you foreshadow something. In this story, you just tell people.
They just smack you in the face with it. At the very first part where they're like, someone opened it from the other side. You're like, oh, well.
Hey, who else has the power to do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the only guy
who...
Light
becomes dark and dark becomes light.
And this is very true to video games. Red is bad, blue is good, typically. You know, if you see red, you shoot it.
You shoot red, you save... Yeah.
If it's blue or green, it's on your side. And they've stuck to that. If anything... had a slight hint of green to it. It was a bad guy.
Yep.
It was bad. So as soon as the first guy, Wizard, the Guardian, showed any bit of green in his eyes, and then they're like, someone opened it from the other side. Clearly it's that guy. It's not Athelstan. He didn't do it. You know, he's still trying to figure things out.
I think they should have taken the approach of the Lord of the Ring approach with Saruman. How in the first Lord of the Rings... They don't even wait till the end of the film to make everybody aware that Saruman is a bad guy. They establish that right in the center of the film. Hey, this guy works for the evil dude. This is pretty much somebody you don't want to mess with. look, he just threw Gandalf on the roof. Check it out, you know, kind of deal. I think going with that approach and making the fans aware that we know you've caught on already. We know that you know, so we're just letting you know that we're affirming that. We're making sure that everybody's on the same
page.
You
drew the right conclusion. Congratulations.
Exactly. And for that payoff, we're going to give you another half a movie that actually will make sense. I think that should have been the route they should have taken with this particular character, because as you realize it at the end of the film, like, oh, yeah, I knew that. Is there anything else you wanted to tell me? Is he the dad kind of deal? Yeah. I would have liked to have had that type of revelation added to that rather than just like, oh, he's the guy and he's turning into a demon.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. From his introductory scene, he was kind of sketchy.
He really was.
He's just like all the way up at the top of the tower making a clay golem just for the heck of it.
And he
kind of had like this offness quality to his personality, and not because he was some wise sage magic user person, but like intentionally, psychologically a little bit off.
Is he some kind of like end boss for the game or something? Is he like the you know, Sagat or something of the?
Not really.
No. So is he you know, important?
Does he ever
the,
show up at all?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much is the question I'm asking. Does he even matter to the whole lore of the film of the franchise?
More so just in setting things up. I haven't encountered him or anything like that, but yeah, this is all stuff that, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's very easy to go and play through the game and not even know any of the lore, especially if you jump into it now, because everything's so mainstream and they try to make things really easy nowadays. So this is stuff that, you know, if you're a WoW fan and you actually want to know stuff, it's like, oh, let me find out some lore. It's all there.
As we said, this is a spoiler review, so we're going to go ahead and talk about the ending real quick, because that's what we do. And so as Ragnar Lothar Kinsavisge, whoever he is, as he is fighting with the Guardian, Medivh, with the help of Cagdar, the runaway mage, they defeat him and they go and help the king, who is fighting the Horde, that is currently, you know, having their own troubles.
Yeah, the portal starts opening again. Additional orcs are pouring in. The humans and the orcs are warring.
They're warring against themselves.
The orcs and the orcs are warring too.
The orcs
yeah.
and the orcs
the
are
orcs
warring.
The orcs and the other orcs. The
and
green
then Mork
orcs.
From Ork is just chilling there.
Mork from Ork?
Yeah.
Or the Ork from Ork?
Any which way.
The kind of thing that, I kind of want to go in and explain this because they don't explain it at all.
It didn't explain anything to me. I was like, okay, they're fighting and then they're not fighting, and then he's cheating, and they're upset, and now he's dead, and this is going on.
Yeah, like, okay, as, you know, you guys don't know anything about World of Warcraft, did you understand at all
totally
why
empty.
There were different clans Color? Warring with each other within the orcs?
There were different clans?
Yeah.
They had different skin tones.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Like,
but aside from
comes in later.
Durotan being
the
an
chieftain.
Honorable, like valorous chieftain warrior of the orcs, noticing that there. Hey guys, there's a pattern here. This dude with the magic who's leading us, pretty much, he's the reason our world just died in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so I think, based on the quality of his character, you can see some distinction between the orcs, but I don't know categorically that they did a good job of explaining anything.
So what is the distinction? Why is this play an important role, and why do you think it wasn't mentioned in the film?
I do not know for the life of me why it wasn't mentioned in the film, because that's something that really would have helped clear a lot of things up for people. So I'm going to try to explain it very quickly, because it's kind of a lot. But as you know, Draenor, basically at this point, is a dying, you know, it's a dying realm at this point. So the orcs look to Gul'dan, which Gul'dan used to be a shaman, was imbued with demonic powers, basically, which you hear them reference.
The
very Fel? Yes, the Fel. Fel magic is supposed to be, like, the most evil kind of magic in existence. Which is why everybody freaks out when in the film it's mentioned, oh, you know, he was poisoned by the Fel, or fel magic of any kind is just, you know, it's
so it's just
pretty
dark
much,
magic or
yeah,
something.
It's like
yeah,
blood
dark magic.
It's like what?
Blood magic.
It is actually.
Yeah, if you've played Dragon Age. Okay.
Yeah, no, it actually is. In the case of the orcs, it is. So Gul'dan, they're basically looking at Gul'dan. Gul'dan, in short, tells them, hey, you know, the only way for us to really survive is to go to this realm, drink this demon blood, because it's going to make you stronger. And funny enough, you mentioned the different skin tones. The demon blood actually makes them green, because they're not typically green. They're actually brown.
Like Durotan and his
clan. Oh. Now, Durotan and his clan refuse to drink the demon blood. They kind of think something is sketchy with Gul'dan, you know, but they're still kind of following him, but they kind of sense that something's off. You know, you don't really get the full culmination of that until they're in Azeroth. And
so the green ones are like literally drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So That's exactly what's happening.
Is that why those are the ones that are particularly like fighting against Durotan in those certain scenes where you see there's a very big distinction between Durotan's group and the people that are like popping out of like holes and whatnot to surprise attack Durotan?
Basically, yes. And another thing that they showed in the film also, which is for the life of me, I don't know why they didn't explain it, is they show basically the orcs kind of don't want to follow Gul'dan anymore, yet he has this control over them, if you notice, and that is brought in because of the demon blood that they ended up drinking. So now, not only, you know, did their skin, you know, gives their skin a green hue, but they don't realize that they're under complete control of Gul'dan.
And that, you know what, there was a slight hint of that. So at the very end of the film, obviously, like we said, the spoiler alert, there's a large battle between the orcs and the humans, and there's also fighting amongst the orcs themselves, but it gets to a point to where Gul'dan is upset because of their insubordination, because they're talking about not wanting to follow him anymore, and then he just points and is like, you know, go fight for whatever, and they all just turn and start running after they were just standing pretty defiant.
Right, they were pretty...
They were like...
had solidarity about...
Yeah, they were like, oh, you know, you cheated, you're dishonorable, blah, blah, blah.
And this is after he just murdered a poster character.
Yeah.
Like, I did not expect that. Usually the guy on the poster lives to the next movie.
So, spoiler alert, Durotan does die.
In this
battle. Honorable death.
And I don't know if it was honorable.
It's a martyr. Very honorable. It's a martyr death because
he gave himself up to prove to his people...
It's like one of those trial by combat situations. You can go one-on-one with another orc and try and, you know, be right or whatever. That's the final judgment. So he fights the main shaman guy who, like, that was pretty badass when he takes, you know, he's walking around all decrepit. It's kind of like a Yoda scene. And then he stands straight up and he's got these things growing out of his shoulders and he goes toe-to-toe with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he has to resort to blood magic to cheat.
Yeah.
And then that's what they're saying, like, oh, he's a cheater.
And that's what I meant. His way of fighting was dishonorable, not the way he died, but so forth. So
No. Durotan's method of fighting was honorable, and his death was honorable. Gul'dan, was totally dishonorable.
That's what I meant.
And he did not die in that battle.
Yeah, Gul'dan was cheating.
Exactly. Forgot where we were at. Thanks a lot, Chad.
You confused me because you said he was dishonorable in his death.
Yeah, but then like
he didn't die in that battle.
No,
Durotan died.
Yeah, he
in
got
battle.
Caught cheating. He used blood magic to beat the main character, kill the main character, one of the main characters, and then all the other orcs are like, "You cheater! You know you're a bad guy." And then he just turns and's like, "Oh, fight those guys!" And they go,
and they all just they all just turn and they all start running. And there's a certain point to where something happens. And one of them almost like shakes out of some kind of trance. And I was like, oh, maybe he's controlling him. Maybe there's something going on. But there's actual credence to the fact that he's controlling him?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. See, and that's why I felt like it was such an important... If you're not going to explain anything else, even like... Seriously, you could go through that whole film not explaining anything else, but at least that much, they really should have devoted a little bit more time to at least explaining that much, because it's what that film rests on, basically, especially when it comes to the orcs. You know, because there's the conflict between the humans, but more intricately, there's the conflict between the orcs, and you have no idea where that's stemming from.
That's 100% true, because just watching it as someone, even being vaguely familiar, I was just like, man, orcs are
jerks.
Yeah, that's what they seemed like to me. I'm like, dude, they're just, aren't they related? They're over here jacking each other's stuff up and messing up their homes and all that. So that makes a little bit more sense for that part. So as the film continues, we get into this huge battle between the king and the orcs and whatnot. And spoiler, like we said, the king actually has Garona kill him for honorable reasons, so that
that's going to bring peace.
Because it was supposed to, exactly, it was supposed to bring peace somehow.
Well, at the very beginning of the movie, they're talking to her about how much honor she would get if she killed that queen.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, I could kill you and get so much honor right now. Why would you just stand in front of me, you idiot?
Yeah.
And the queen's like, well, because I think you're a good person, you know, and they have that moment. And so then they take that and then put it at the end, so the king is about to get mowed down. Like, his days are numbered.
They're surrounded. There's
Super Hulk guys coming at him, and he's pissed. And he's like, well, I might as well have this girl who I trust kill me and rack up these honor points and instead of just getting killed by this other guy.
Was it meant to bring peace to between the orcs and the humans, or was it just supposed to bring peace to the orcs that were fighting? I didn't understand that fully.
I think in general his sentiments were more so, I'm gonna die anyways. It doesn't make any sense for you to die with me. You might as well, you know, because for her entire, you know, you gotta imagine as a halfling, especially being raised by orcs, they're, you know, she's not a part of them. Mm-mm. You know, so he probably is thinking, and this is me like playing psychology here, but you know, what I got out of that was, it makes no sense for both of us to die. What I'd rather you kill me rather than this big hulking orc that's like, you know, that's about to end me. So why don't you kill me, and that's gonna bring you a whole bunch of honor. And it clearly did, because they even called her an orc
instead
of a halfling, or instead of treating her as though she wasn't accepted.
It's interesting because, and I think the way that the sequence ultimately plays out, it's very clear, but his actual words were something along the lines of, the way to bring peace to the orcs and the humans is for you to kill me. And it's kind of like those other sequences we talked about a few minutes ago, where it's like, you get 80% of the scene finished and then you just move on to something else. Yep. You don't fully finish that moment.
And keeping everything in context with the dialogue as well as the actions, they didn't seem to like connect.
He eventually, the king just like turns his back on her and goes and starts fighting and just assumes that she's going to get it and come and kill him instead of letting him be killed by, you know, the big hulking out dude.
Yeah. So ultimately, she kills him. She gets the honor, and so forth. And so we get the gist of the whole scene. That pretty much ends her whole run throughout that film, throughout that part of the way the film goes. Then we come to Ragnar coming back to where all the fighting is. He sees the king dead. He sees the blade that's in the back of his neck, and he's knocked out. You know, so we're like, okay, what's going to happen? Are they going to kill him? Are they going to string him up? Or, you know, however, he wakes up to find that he's in a circle where he's going to face off with the orc that killed his son. This scene, in my opinion, was way too short. As that fight scene goes, where he runs, slides on the floor, cuts the man's private in twine, and then turns around and stabs him in the back. And that's it.
I agree. I think leading right up to that, though, is pretty awesome. Because he makes his awesome, you know, landing off that Griffith thing. Yeah. And he, you know, the Griffiths go,
beat they're mowing down things. People like crazy.
And then he's going to save the king and bring his body back so they can give him a burial. And just as you think he's escaping, the hand of that big super beast just grabs the Griffith and slams it. That was probably one of like the coolest moments of the movie for me.
That's why in Lord of the Rings, the golden eagles always fly in a flock.
Oh,
is that not so? Just one at a time.
Is that so?
Oh, yeah.
But I saw that and then I was like, oh, it's on now. Didn't know they were going to give him like this whole one-on-one thing, because I was thinking that myself. How are they going to get him out of this situation? He's surrounded by thousands of these things. They're just going to maul him.
And what is the motivation of Blackhand, the large,
the abomination looking thing,
fell-sized orc at this point. What is his motivation for having a single combat against the human?
I think that adds
because to what... there would be a motivation the other way for the human to say, "Oh, this is your way,
yeah,
your people's way. I challenge you." But Ragnar kind of wakes up already having been challenged. Like the sword just comes and lands beside him.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why did that guy want to just single combat?
So I think that goes to what Carla was saying as far as being controlled by the Fel, by the power of Gul'dan. I'm assuming that's what that references to, which was not explained, which is why it was confusing.
Well, Lothar cut his hand off, right?
Yeah.
That's how he lost his hand.
No, he didn't cut his arm.
Oh, it's not?
He blew it. Durotan saved his life by... cutting off his
but his arm. He did shoot the what they call it, the boomstick.
Yeah, I thought that's thing. How he
he put his hand over it and he pulled the trigger. True. And
that
it,
was him.
Yeah, and so that's why when it comes to the scene when he's about to kill his son, he like points to his hand. He's like, "Yeah, it's me, sucka," and then I'm about to kill your boy. And so you know he took his hand, he took his son. Rubber match. It was like third round. That's why I thought it was justified, because he took something of his. It was clearly personal between the two. They locked eyes in that scene through the wall, and it was like, me and you are going to finish this. And them being as proud as they are of a fighting culture, I'm sure he thought he was just going to mop the floor with them. Like, they knew he was formidable, because look how many orcs he took out.
Yeah. I wish that scene would have had... I mean, even if it didn't finish... Even if he would have knocked him down or knocked him out in some fashion and left him for something to continue on, like to fester as far as the angst between the two, to fester for the sequel of the film, which there probably will be. I just thought the ending was like, okay. So, boom, boom, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am kind of deal. Because he just left and was gone. I don't know. What do you think, Chad? Do you think that scene was too quick? Do you think you...
Honestly, at that point, I was a little over Ragnar's character. Like, I really like Vikings.
Yeah.
Right? And so, I appreciate his work on that show, and I was excited to see him in this movie, and then I felt like, oh, he's kind of like a second-tier character, and then his arc isn't all that... awesome. Like, yeah, he fights orcs and he kills them and whatever, but then he also, I don't know, he has those goofy moments with the mage who's like his surrogate son, sort of, kind of. I mean, it was just his character, his arc confused me a bit, and so by the point of the showdown, I was sort of like, okay, well, they're doing this because they have to resolve this part of the plot, not because it makes a lot of organic sense to do this right now, but because we need to end the movie.
Yeah.
So, from that standpoint, I was kind of glad it didn't go on forever, because you already had a very, like, valuable showdown between Durotan and Gul'dan, who was just the better character, in my opinion.
Well, you know, as that pretty much ends the film as Lothar is named the new king of Azeroth, and we get at the end of the film, we get a glimpse of Durotan's baby, whom his mother, while running away, puts him in a basket, very Moses-like, and he is found by
someone
that is not seen. They just pick up the basket, and alluding to pretty much that storyline continuing on to the second film.
And that baby's already green.
He is.
Yes. And a lot of that stems from the way that he was born. You know, when he was born, basically stillborn, and Gul'dan took, you know, life force from the deer to imbue into the baby, which they made a really big deal about explaining, you know, Durotan has a son, you know, with his wife, and that's because his son grows up to be a pretty big deal.
Does he?
In WoW lore, yeah.
Huh.
So, you know... the name he was given is Goel, but he's known as Thrall.
Thrall.
So, yeah. Yeah, so he becomes a pretty big deal.
When I was doing the little... Because they handed you a little card, and they want you to write down your thoughts to the movie. First of all, I thought the movie was an absolute blast. I have to say that. I think the movie was an absolute blast.
Thought it was an absolute blast?
I thought it was an absolute blast. You can put that on anything. But besides that, I put, like... I was just kind of doing a stream of consciousness, like, just things I was thinking of, and one of them was... I really liked the ending. But I didn't mean it like in a jerk way, like I normally would. Uh-huh. Like, oh man, I'm
so like glad. Like you normally would, so.
Yeah, I'm so glad. The ending was the best part because I don't have to sit through this crap no more. But I mean, I really like the ending. Like the ending was good. They left it where it's open.
Yeah.
But it's not a cliffhanger because they ended this part of the story. This chapter is complete and they made it bigger. So the next time you know, we're going to be seeing more elves. We're going to be seeing the dwarves get involved. It moved from just like a human orc problem to like, this is a big deal, and we all need to be worried about it.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things about this film is that you recognize right away at the end of the film that there's going to be a push for a second film. There's going to be a push for a continuation of the story, which, from what I'm hearing from the both of you, this lore runs pretty deep, and it's pretty extensive, so there's plenty of source material. Mm-hmm. So all in all, let's go ahead and rate this film. How do you see it? Pass or fail, Corey?
It's gonna pass, but just barely.
Barely pass.
Yeah, I think you should go see the movie. I don't think it's bad whatsoever. I think being a fan is obviously only gonna help you with mm-hmm. the experience. But I, as someone who is just a fan of video games, I think I said this as soon as it ended. On a scale of just movies, pass just barely. If we're, you know, rating this compared to other video game movies,
yeah,
this is Gone with the Wind. Like, it's brilliant.
It's
like,
that good.
Oh yeah, come on, we got Super Mario yeah. Brothers, we got Mortal Kombat 2.
Who doesn't like John Leguizamo as Luigi?
I mean, Street Fighter, oh my yeah. gosh, thank you.
The second Street Fighter, the first one wasn't bad.
They're all bad.
Yeah.
So in that scale, I mean, Assassin's Creed is going to be terrible. In terms of video game movies, this is a home run.
Chad, pass or fail?
I would agree. I would say pass if I were rating it 5 monocles, because that's what we do, because we're the film philosophers. I'd give it 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really middle of the road for me, but I liked it more than I expected to. The trailers leading up to it didn't lead me to believe that it was going to be as enjoyable as it was.
Mm-hmm. Carla, pass or fail?
I'm going to say, as a World of Warcraft fan, it is definitely a pass.
Okay.
But as a general moviegoer, because I tend to look at things through both perspectives, it is just a barely pass.
Barely pass.
Yeah. But as a fan, it was, I mean, there was so much fan service mm-hmm. in there, too. Lots of Easter eggs. Totally enjoyed myself with it.
For myself, I feel it passes on the video game aspect, video game movie aspect, because I may not know as much about video games, but I know well enough more about video game movies, and I can tell you, we were talking about this, the evolution of the way the films have come across. I believe this is the next step before we finally get that awesome video game movie. From a cinematic standpoint, the story was a little bit all over the place, but all in all, it did create a story that, you know what, I would like to see continued. So I would give it a pass as well.
And quite frankly, not knowing kind of meta that this is based on a video game series, I didn't have the feeling coming out of the theater that this was a video game movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it actually, I would have believed you if you said this is based on a book series.
Yeah.
Because it was in that epic vein.
Well, that about does our review for this show. A couple movie bites we want to leave you before we go is The Avengers composer Alan Silvestri is returning for Infinity War. Also, Justice League has released their official movie title in a tweet by Geoff Johns, and the film will be known as Justice League.
Lo and behold.
That's it.
That's it.
Spider-Man Homecoming has now casted actor Michael Barbieri as Genk, the best friend to Ultimate Spider-Man's Miles Morales.
Gunke? I don't think it'd be Genk.
I'm not all too familiar with
the Genk in video game term. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. By all means, we're still on. I was
thinking the same. It's kind of hard to explain. It's like when you leave your post to go assist an ally mm-hmm. to surprise the enemy.
Well, there you go. Genked.
You used it correctly.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good job.
That about wraps up our show for today. So, you know, we want to thank you for listening. And, of course, if you want to check out more and even comment on the show, check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Also, we want to let you know that if you've been listening to this podcast, that we are going to give away an exclusive Warcraft movie T-shirt. All you got to do is repost the actual show from our Facebook page. And when you repost it, use the hashtag Azeroth or Bust. That is something that actually Chad came up with.
That's
which
right.
I'm impressed.
Those orcs are on their way somewhere. Azeroth or Bust.
So again, just repost the Facebook audio that we have and repost it on your page with the hashtag Azeroth or Bust.
And we will randomly choose a winner sometime within the next week.
That's right. And of course, we want to thank our guests, Mr. Corey Vincent and Miss Carla Von Guerra. Corey, where can people find you at?
You can find us on Twitter at VideoGameBang, Facebook.com/VideoGameBang, and our brand new website where you can find all the archived episodes of Video Game Bang and The Filmlosophers, VGBstudios.com.
That is going to be awesome. And Carla, where can people find you?
I am on Facebook at Facebook.com/KVonWar, Twitter.com/KVonWar, YouTube.com/KVonWar.
That's a lot of KVon.
Yeah, lockdown on that URL. Yep. Good for you, girl.
Yep.
And as always, you know, thanks again for showing up and listening to what we have to say. And of course, from myself, Eddie Villanueva,
I'm Chad Riley.
Class dismissed.